How's it going tonight, Lee?
Good. How you doing, Joe?
Doing good. Been looking over my notes that I took for the, 2 weeks ago shows now, and it feels like it's so much easier to go over these notes not being in the thick of it.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, there was just a lot to go over anyway.
Yeah, I was burned out from wrestling from that weekend, but let's hit the intro and let's kind of dig into these events we watched.
Yeah, and welcome everybody to Unscripted Violence. Staggered Lee here, along with producer Joe. And we're going to be going over GCW's collective, other things that happened on WrestleMania weekend, which was about 2 weeks ago. Took some time to put everything together, so forgive the lateness of this all, but it was, like we were saying, it's a lot. It was a lot of wrestling to take in.
Yeah, and it's kind of one thing if you're watching it as a fan, but it's another thing to sit there, take notes, you know, and try and come up with opinions to talk about off these shows.
Definitely.
And, now let's start, because we didn't watch too much the same. I think Bloodsport is the only thing we both watched.
Yes.
So what we'll do is we'll talk not at length about Bloodsport, but that will be more of both of our opinions. And then we'll kind of, I'll ask Lee about Effie's Big Gay Brunch and Planet Death, and that's kind of how we'll get into that.
Definitely, we can do it that. That sounds like a good way to attack everything. I didn't have enough time to take a lot of notes on Effie's Big Gay Brunch, but to give you an overview of it and from what I saw,
Now, going into the weekend, what were you most excited about watching?
I was most excited about watching Planet Death.
Okay. For me, it was probably for the culture or the world on Lucha, which both I actually haven't watched still, which is amazing.
World on Lucha is one that I don't know if I would put it in place of any of the ones that I got though either.
Yeah, it's tough, especially with so many options. And like, if you went for the collective bundle, I think it was $180. If you went for the WrestleCon bundle, it was closer to just $80. But there's a lot of events in there. And, you know, I almost prefer to buy it a la carte. That way I can choose, like, pick and choose the things I want to watch. And as always, Bloodsport was near the top of the list. And have you seen any Bloodsports before this event?
No, I haven't. The only Bloodsport I knew of was the movie, which I loved as a kid. I was really impressed with the setup, how similar that they made it to that.
Yeah, one thing I love about the Bloodsport events is that they introduce the competitors, and it's almost like the old All Japan, where like you had the guys in the ring, you know, everybody gets announced, and then Josh Barnett comes out and gives a little speech after it.
Yeah.
As they were heading to the backstage area, Suzuki and Dickinson got in each other's face. And Lenny Leonard and Rocky Romero were the commentators for this. What did you think about the commentary team not being the regular GCW crew?
I enjoyed on it. They gave it a real sports feel to it. From the way that they did it. I thought they were real professional about it and everything. Of course, I was wanting to, or I was thinking I was going to, because this was the first event that I watched out of the three that I watched. I was thinking it was going to be the regular commentary team, and it wasn't. But it was a nice surprise, and I think ended the event.
Definitely. Now, the first matchup was surprisingly a ladies' match, and I only say surprisingly because there were only two women's matches on this card, but Masha Slamovich versus Janaya Kai kicked this off. Is this your first time seeing both women?
Not Janaya Kai. I'm kind of familiar with her. I got interested in her on the darts, actually. I think I saw her on one or two of the darts. And then I saw a couple online with her, coincidentally, and I watched those too. So I did know about her. Masha, not so much. I've heard of her, but this is the first time I've seen her.
Now, Masha, she's somebody I've seen on the indies up in the Northeast. I haven't seen as much Janaya Kai live, but I have seen her team with Yo-Yo on the indies. And I thought this was an interesting opener. I thought it was very competitive. Like, I'm just down with the whole blood sport setup.
Yeah. I liked it.
And especially when the ladies' matches are a little more rare on this card, I feel like it makes them more special. So I really enjoyed them.
Yeah, I really liked this match a lot. I liked both ladies. It was in the end Masha who hit the Northern Lights suplex and then locked in an armbar. A tap, but Janai is no slouch. I've seen her a few times. I like her. What do they call her? The kick fighting demon.
Yep.
Yeah, she fits that role perfectly.
Now Slamovich got the win in 4:43, and the follow up match to this actually had Janai Kai's tag team partner Yo-Yo versus Ninja Mac. Yo-Yo has been in prior blood sports, slightly smaller competitor. So that's why I was excited to see Ninja Mac in there with him.
Yeah, and the big surprise to me was Ninja Mac unmasking before the match, getting in the spirit of blood sport guys that he's under.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. I've never seen it happen before, but kind of, I was wondering how he'd fit in here, and the unmasking helped. Now, this was a great stylistic matchup. At one point, it spilled to the outside. It was the first match to actually do that. And it was actually ended by referee stoppage at 6:06, which I thought was surprising, with Ninja Mac getting the win.
Yeah, it was a surprise kind of comeback win because Ninja Mac was kind of on the downside of the match, and he just did that kick-ass spinning kick. I don't know. I may have seen him do it before on other matches. I can't remember, but that looked devastating. It connected. It sounded. It felt just like one of the hardest kicks you could ever feel. And yeah, the ref coming in and stopping it, it looked great.
And it's almost hard to judge somebody's style in a blood sport match given like in a regular match, because blood sport just has its own feel to it. And it, even though you know it's still within the frame of pro wrestling, it's the most, you know, trying to give it legitimacy thing in wrestling, and that's why I think I really like it.
Yeah, me too. I definitely get that feel from it. It's got a great feel all the way around. I enjoyed the whole feel of it all together, the whole atmosphere that they built around it. It's really well done.
Now, the match after that was Bad Dude Tito versus Royce Isaacs. I assume you've seen Royce Isaacs on, like, NWA. Have you ever seen Bad Dude Tito before?
I have not seen Bad at all. Brand new guy to me. Intimidating.
I've always seen him on these blood sports. Yeah, he's been on the blood sports before. Bigger dude. When I first saw him, I was skeptical, but then after, like, I think he was on a couple blood sports after that, and he's really grown on me. And that made this matchup really interesting, because Isaacs has the grappling. You know, this was another match where it spilled to the floor, and it kind of leads to that excitement with the no ropes.
Yeah. I liked that aspect of it, and plus the floor being bare with no padding added to it too. It just made it feel that much more legitimate, like you said.
Oh yeah, so much of what they do in these matches really lends to the legitimacy of things, which, you know, especially when you know it's pro wrestling, you need as much of that as you can possibly get. So
this is if I had a friend who was an MMA fan and never saw pro wrestling before in his life, this is something I would like to introduce him to first, to tell him, hey, this is pro wrestling as well, what do you think? And then broaden their view. It would just be kind of a stepping stone, if you will, to pro wrestling for somebody who's never seen it before, doesn't know what it's about.
I've had a very similar thought, because this, like, it really tries to imitate regular fighting as much as possible. And, like, the next matchup was probably, I mean, Royce Isaacs got the win in that match in 5 minutes 37 seconds. But it's the next matchup with Slade versus Alex Coughlin. This is interesting because Slade, he's presented more as a street fighter, where if you look at Alex Coughlin, he is New Japan Dojo trained graduate.
Yeah.
These guys get right in each other's faces. And this was a battle.
It was really good, and like you said, Slade is just that brute, no-nonsense pro wrestler. Where you said Alex Coughlin, he has that type of MMA type grappling type background to him. I enjoyed this match all the way to the finish, which was a great finish to it, I thought.
Yeah, Alex Coughlin got the win in 3:34. And you're noticing from a lot of these times, they're not long matches, but it's right. Not like you feel cheated by the short match.
Oh, no, you don't at all. You get entertained that whole 5 minutes it goes on. And every competitor, I must say, they were well matched with each other. Evenly matched, and the matchups were just very put together by somebody very thoughtful.
Yeah, there was only one that I would consider a mismatch, but we'll get into that when we get to it. But next, John Hennigan versus Simon Gotch. When this was announced, this was one of the ones that I was more interested in, because obviously both former WWE talents. Gotch has been in Bloodsport before, but John Hennigan, kind of like Ninja Mac, great in the ring, but I wasn't sure how his style was gonna kind of, you know, conform to this, but I thought he fit in well. You found out a lot about his actual amateur credentials during this match.
Definitely. And I enjoyed this match quite a bit myself. Hennigan impressed me.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, they mentioned that Gotch is heading to Pro Wrestling Noah, who Ninja Mac is also going to do a tour over there. during the match, they mention Hennigan has Division I wrestling credentials, which when you see Hennigan in ring, you wouldn't necessarily think of him as an amateur wrestler.
Yeah, you wouldn't at all. He's a very big dude.
Yeah, and I think we know him more for like his athletic moves, but he looked great in the ring against Gotch. You know, and Gotch always looks great in these matches. And Hennigan's striking was good. Like, I was impressed with his grappling, and then when it got to the striking, I'm like, wow, this guy is more of a wrestler than I might have ever realized before.
Yeah, it was quite impressive, and he looked really good on, like you said.
Hennigan got the win in 5 minutes, 59 seconds. Like, you know, didn't really take too much time in that.
No, and it didn't need to. It was really great. And the next match was finishing up as we were first texting.
And isn't it funny that we're coming off talking about the matchup with Jade Cargill and Marina Shafir? And if you're just looking at Marina Shafir from like an AEW point of view, you might not get the amount of danger that Jade Cargill is in, or think that it's, you know, almost lopsided towards Marina. But like, yeah, you can really see what she can do in this match.
Oh yeah, and she beyond impressed in this match. Zhang was no slouch herself. This is the first time I've seen her, but she was a great, solid wrestler too, which only made Marina seem that much better.
Yeah, now Zhang had been in a prior Bloodsport, and she had wanted the Shafir matchup. And I really enjoyed that when both ladies got into the ring, they looked super intense, not taking their eyes off of each other. You know, it was an entertaining, competitive match. At one point, Zhang had this really believable choke on that I thought she was going to get the win. And to me, it was the grappling and the reversals that made this match over the Slamovich Kai match. It was just like a little bit better. You know what I mean? Like, it
yeah,
wasn't
I do.
Much wilder, but it just edged that one out.
Yeah, you put it. It was enough to put it over a bit more in my head. And like you said, the grappling being a key integral part of that, just showing what they could do, and that it didn't have to be kicks and punches. It could be trading submissions, which is what it in the long run. And that final submission that Marina got in was pretty cool, because she had two submissions in on her at once, which was the wrist lock and what she was doing with her legs. So that made it the win much better to me.
Oh yeah, like I was super into this match. And you know, Shafir gets the win in 7 minutes 54 seconds, and the match that followed this was probably the only mismatch size wise you had JR Kratos versus Timothy Thatcher. And
yeah,
when
I
saw this announced, it seemed like an odd matchup, because Kratos is so big, bulky, you'd consider him more of like a power wrestler, where Thatcher is more of a grappler. Not that he doesn't have power, but you think of him more as like a wrestler's wrestler.
Yeah. And there was a couple things that he did. I mean, Thatcher kicks really well, which I noted. And that got him to do things like a half crab submission, and kind of wear Kratos down and things like that.
And I thought it was interesting that these guys actually have history together. You can hear from the introductions that they're both from San Diego. They've trained with each other. You know, Thatcher, even though he's a good grappler, he displayed his striking. Kratos bled. And in the most surprising move of the night, Kratos won by knockout at 9 minutes and 26 seconds. Did that win surprise you?
A little bit, because, yeah, it looked like Thatcher really had Kratos' number at one point. And then he, especially after he hit that German suplex, which looked amazing. And then Kratos just hits that pile of the Superman punch, and that was it.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a different outcome than what I was thinking.
Yeah, and in one of the matches I was anticipating off this, Speedball Mike Bailey versus Yuya Uemura. You know, Speedball has gotten a lot of attention this year because being able to wrestle in the United States, he's been making the run on the indies, got a spot on Impact. And Uemura, he's a New Japan young lion who is going on excursion. And I think this is as good a event as any to kind of test his skills.
Definitely. And this was a really good, another thoughtful matchup. These guys seemed like that they were made to have this match together in my eyes.
Yeah, perfect size-wise. Like, there was great grappling from Uemura. At one point, the grappling was almost so even that they rolled to the floor from the ring with Bailey looking like he caught the worst of it on his back. I really enjoyed this match.
Oh, I did too. And, Bailey hit back, you know, all those kicks, and then you would just lift him up and drove him down to the this and got that cross arm breaker, making Speedball tap out. That was a surprising ending to me too. I was really solidly behind Speedball on that.
Yeah, and he got the win at 7:04, and I thought this was going to be tough because I thought Speedball had a good chance to win since he's kind of having that run on the indies right now. But Uemura, especially with that New Japan style, it feels like he's almost more cut out for this.
Yeah, definitely.
And this was followed by Jonah versus Josh Barnett. This was definitely a big man battle. I thought the match made Jonah feel big time. Like, not that he's not, but I mean, especially when you get a match against the namesake of the event, that kind of puts you in that premier spot. Good grappling contest. And I was amazed that the headbutt is still a spot, even with like two powerful men like this.
Yeah, that's true. They did have the headbutt in there. Yeah. This is my first time seeing either. Like you said, they matched each other well. Both of them, you know, were reaching a stalemate in the middle of the match almost. And then Jonah headbutting Barnett, like you said, and Barnett ended up getting that spinning heel kick, and then some Barnett, and then following with that flurry of moves adds the heel hook. Making tap out.
Yeah, I got the win at 8:46. Now, if you've never seen Barnett before, you can find this on YouTube. It was the main event of maybe Bloodsport 2, maybe 3. And okay. It was Josh Barnett versus Minoru Suzuki. And to me, it is the best match ever. It is definitely available free on YouTube. It is the match to see if you enjoyed this event.
I will look that up tonight, as a matter of fact. I'm writing now, it down.
The following match, Biff Busick versus John Moxley. The anticipation for this match is not quite to the level that I had for Suzuki Barnett when that happened, but Biff Busick coming off that NXT run, and I believe he might have made it to SmackDown, and I feel like he's so much better on the indies. Him versus Moxley in this event was one of the dream matchups, and this match, Busick bled like crazy. I feel like the story of the match was him putting up this incredible fight for like a match that he was almost destined to lose. You know, Busick gave Moxley the Danielson head kicks, but Moxley was able to KO Busick with a running knee at 10 minutes and 25 seconds. What was your level of anticipation for this match?
I was for it because this is the first I've seen of Busick's indie appearances since NXT. And he kind of, as the NXT product changed, he changed with it a little bit, but they have him more of it as a tag team type of position. So seeing him solo was cool, and seeing what he could do was awesome.
And I've been really familiar with him off the Northeast Indies. Like the song that he came out to, Bro Him by Pennywise.
Yes.
They, at a lot of Beyond events, that is the song that they will kick the night off with. And there was even a time, I want to say it was a New Year's Eve show, where Biff Busick was in NXT and he showed up at a Beyond event. You know, he wasn't on the card wrestling, but he did like a meet and greet. And I was able to get like a best of Biff Busick and Beyond, and then a him and Eddie Edwards feud DVD from Beyond. And this guy meant so much to like Beyond in the indies that it's almost a shame that he was squandered in NXT and WWE. But it's good to see him making the return now.
Yeah, and he's a great competitor. This match, he looked really great in. And no shame in losing to Mox ever.
No, especially when you show the amount of heart he did. Now, at the main event, Chris Dickinson versus Minoru Suzuki. This is a rematch from a prior Bloodsport. And this is kind of marking Dickinson's return to GCW. He's been out for, God, it feels like almost a year. It's probably like 6 months. And, you know, he's appeared at GCW shows to keep himself like in the fans' minds. But this was an intense strike. Like, I didn't have a lot of notes for this because this is one of the few matches from the weekend that I just kind of sat back and enjoyed.
Well, yeah, you had to. I just had Dickinson, you know, first of all, take down at first and trying to keep him basically grounded. And then Suzuki kept trying for the submission. And it's really the story of their struggles with each other in that regard. But in the end, Dickinson just hit like this wicked brain buster and followed these like real heavy elbows that caused the match to end with bridge. It was a good match.
He almost looked mad by it.
Yeah, he did kind of look like he was like a bit annoyed, but he got on the on the mic and just said that there's three letters in everyone's house, and GCW is those letters, and Dickinson said he was back, and this was obviously a great match for him with Dickinson, but I'm glad you gave the history on that as to this being his first match back in quite some time, and then that all the sense in the world to me.
Now, Dickinson, I'm very familiar with him from the Northeast Indies. He actually was in a faction with Santana and Ortiz, and they also had another guy, Jaka. He would team with Jaka on Evolve, but when they were all together, they were known as Team Pazuzu. And just amazing. Like, Dickinson's style has only been more refined as he's gone on. You know, he's one of those heavy hitters that's steeped in Japanese wrestling. And the more Chris Dickinson you can look up, the better. Now, I skimmed Planet Death. Now, I only watched it to make the outlines of my notes. And right. One thing I will say is I like that this was a shorter show. It was like 2.5 hours, like if that. It was, I think it was just a hair over two.
I think it was, about 2 hours. And that was just enough. One thing I noticed was the crowd's energy.
That's going to happen with those midnight matches. I talked last night about how Joey Janela's spring break is like a midnight and after event.
Right.
And you get a weird energy. You almost get like that slap happiness of being up late, but you definitely have like a different energy to it. And I feel like if Planet Death was maybe earlier in the night, like I said, I haven't dug in and watched it too much, but you'd almost have like a more lively.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping for too. But like you said, it's at the midnight hour. They've probably been doing wrestling all day long, so it's probably the final hurrah for the night. So I could see that. But Nick Gage made his entrance because he's the host, and he sat on commentary this whole event. The first match being Slade versus Bam Sullivan. And Bam's new to me, but he had a shirt that said Clutch Your Nuts, and he mentioned something about the Clutch Your Nuts movement. I don't know what that is.
I feel like it's a parody off the Control Your Narrative movement. I've seen Bam Sullivan come out as a second for, I can't remember the wrestler at this point, but him versus Slade looked interesting. The match I more wanted to ask you about was the next one. What did you think of Cole Radrick in a death match? Because this is only the second death match that I'm aware that he's done.
Well, I watched the first death match that he did and was quite impressed with that one. I was impressed to see him on the card for Planet Death. But he fits right in there, man. Deathmatch wrestling is his thing. And with his regular wrestling skills, he's really talented, as I've seen him be. Cole Radrick, I got nothing but good to say to him in this match. It was just great. And I liked the stipulation of the thumbtacks on the kick pads. That just looked excruciating anytime any of them would get hit with those kick pads.
Yeah, they really did the deathmatch elements up with this. Now, the next match I was interested in, because Sawyer Wreck, I'm not familiar with them, but I've seen, they've been in death matches quite a bit, and Brandon Kirk is somebody that I've only heard of because there's a company, Standalone Wrestling, that's going to be coming to my area up here in Connecticut.
Right. And
we interviewed the promoter, and Brandon Kirk was one of the up and coming deathmatch wrestlers he talked about.
Oh, nice. That was a match that was I was impressed with Sawyer Wreck quite a bit, who landed the choke through a board with tubes in it, because the theme of this match was boards of fuckery. And I liked how the matches had the themes too along with them.
Is one thing that GCW is really big on. Anytime that there's a bunch of stuff around the ring, Kevin Gill likes to call it them getting into fuckery. Like, you'll see it if somebody gets hit with a light tube. He talked the spooky dust being in the air. That's where I like Kevin Gill. And it's tough because me and one of my co-hosts on the Working Fans podcast, we do a little wrestling commentary. And I watch a lot of GCW, and I like that kind of informal, kind of like what Kevin Gill does, where you can say fuck and you can be like, oh, he just caught him in the fucking head, or, you know, stuff like that. You can be a little more goofy. But the commentary that we do, we're almost kind of like being produced to like cut that down. So when I can see a match like this where they can cut loose with it, I enjoy that. Especially like when you get the Kevin Gill reactions, like when somebody's getting stabbed and he's like, oh, what the fuck? Or like, fuck no. Like, I enjoy that.
I like his, what I've noticed is it, damn it. Just...
Yeah, there's certain things he does that, like, I just like the way he says it. Now, I'm going to skip over Neil Diamond Cutter and Shane Mercer, because I'm into Shane Mercer, but this match didn't do a ton for me. And the next matchup, you got Hoodfoot, who has recently made a debut in GCW, and he's in the ring against the deathmatch legend Madman Pondo.
Awesome dead death match. It was a little bit slow moving. By that I mean Madman Pondo was a little bit slow moving. but I did enjoy it.
I didn't even know he still did death matches, so I was surprised to see him in this.
Yeah, he's definitely up there in age. Or his body at least shows it in this. But I enjoyed the match for what it was. And Hoodfoot did that fall away backdrop on a chair full of light tubes for the win, which was a nice end to a nice finish.
Yeah, now in the main event, we had GCW mainstay Jimmy Lloyd versus Sadiqa. What did you think about this match?
Once again, it was kind of hard. This one was hard for me to get into, honestly. Sadiqa's very tough. She's a very tough lady. But I don't know how I felt about it, and I don't know how I felt about the finish, honestly. It didn't scream main event to me.
Now, like, I could see GCW putting Jimmy Lloyd in that main event spot. I'm not familiar with Sadiqa, so I didn't know necessarily what to expect. She was also on The World on Lucha, I believe. And okay, I'm going to have to go back and watch this event, because, like I said, I just previewed it from my notes, but I ran out of time.
I think they could have chose a better main event. And I don't know what the deal was with the end of it, because Sadiqa like grabbed a member of the crowd to like translate for her, because she's Spanish speaking. And it didn't really go well, because you could tell the girl was caught off guard and really didn't know how to translate some of the stuff she was saying, and then Jimmy tried giving a response, but he looked like he was just flat frustrated with it and just walked out.
Yeah, and you got to think at that point, it's also like 2:30 in the morning, so there's got to be an element of being tired there. Now, that is the last match that I'm familiar with, and you said the other match, the other event you watched was the Big Gay Brunch?
Yeah.
Why don't you give us a quick, like, overview of that, and then I've got three more shows to share with you.
Yeah, I can
go over those as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I'll go through this as quick as possible too, because a lot of these, well, in fact, almost all of the competitors I was not familiar with, so I was watching a lot of them for the first time. The person on commentary, I don't know if it was Kevin Gill, and I did not write down their name. But
was it the drag queen, Paulo de Mar?
No, it was not. It was Val Capone.
Okay.
Is who it was. They were explaining a lot of the political side of LGBTQ community and different things about the pronouns that you address certain people by and what the proper way was to do with that and everything. And the more I heard that stuff, which was very informative, very educational, and I'm not knocking it, but the more I heard it, I just wanted wrestling, and it seemed to kind of detract from the wrestling quite a bit.
I hear you there, and actually the pronouns is one thing that Dave and I deal with on commentary, because we do commentary for a company called New Heights Wrestling, and they have an individual named Princess Josh. They go by pronouns they, them, instead of he, him. And it's something that
makes it bad English at the same time. It doesn't make it flow right.
We struggle with it so much because it's almost like if you come across as a woman visually, it would be easier to refer to them as they, them. But we are also two straight white men I'm white, Dave's white, half Puerto Rican, and it's just very hard for us to get used to it. So that's one of the reasons why I think Effie's Big Gay Brunch is important. But not being in that community, this is going to come off as sounding completely ignorant, but it just sounds preachy. But
that was the word I was going to use, was preachy, because that was the very thing I was thinking of when reviewing this. How do I put this without offending anybody?
And that's one thing that I feel bad saying it that way, because as a white man, like, I don't know the LGBTQ struggle. I don't know the African American struggle, you know, like the minority struggle. So that's why I think events like Big Gay Brunch and GCW's For the Culture are important, because they spotlight these communities, and especially for the LGBTQ, things like the pronouns are important. And maybe the easiest way to learn it is through entertainment. Like, me and my co-host struggle with it daily, and we feel like we're open-minded people, but it's hard to call somebody that looks like a man they, them. You know, it's just a switch you got to flip in your brain. And I think that's why events like Big Gay Brunch are important.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it educated me. But in the wrestling, we first had Jai Vidal versus Carlos Romo. And Jai Vidal went over on that, defeating Carlos Romo in 12:53. Then we had Max the Impaler with Amy Rose. This is where I was getting kind of, because Max, I believe, is where the they/them first came into commentary. But Max was against Edith Surreal. Max went over on that in 11:17.
What did you think of Edith Surreal's presentation? It's different,
It was very different. Not what you would expect. And the person's presence who I was most wowed by, and talent as well, was in the next match, which was it was a scramble, which was Jordan Blade, Killian McMurphy, Rico Gonzalez, Shea Purser, and Silvio Milano, and wrestler called The Whisper. But Kid Bandit really stuck out in that to me, just doing all these amazing moves and flips. And Kid Bandit was one I wanted to address as she, and I used they them on Kid Bandit, but Jordan Blade went over on that one.
Wow, I'm not familiar with any of those people. Max the Impaler from the match before, I've had, you know, limited exposure to, and they are quite the talent. Edith Surreal used to wrestle as, I believe, a wrestler called like Still Life with Apricot and Pear. And right. There was a very arty intro to what they did. But that's just match. I'm not familiar with any of those people in that scramble, but you know, it's kind of a mainstay of the GCW shows to have that six-way scramble.
Yeah, and it had I'd expect out of the scrambles. I noticed they've been a lot of like high spot matches, and we got a lot of that in there, which was great. But Kid Bandit was the one that stood out most to me, that I took most notice of. Then we had Keita Murray versus Dixon, and Keita went over in 12:32. And let's see, I think I just messed up my notes here. And then the next one we had was Dark Sheik, who I am familiar with versus Paro, and defeating Paro in 11:26.
What
then,
did you think of
Paro? I liked is it Paro?
Yeah, his name is Mike Paro. He was on the early return of MLW. He has been on NWA. This guy is a beast. And I will admit, the first time like that I had found out he was gay, I was surprised. But then I was like, wow, this guy is quite the talent.
Yeah, he's definitely a great competitor. And Dark Sheik is very awesome as well, I think. At each other well in that match. It was a pretty long match.
Yeah, Dark Sheik has really showed out for GCW. You know, I'd say she's one of the standouts. And it's good to see transgender wrestlers kind of getting into the mix and not having the transgender part of their nature be like the overwhelming story.
Right. And the thing I would like to see is more intergender wrestling, but that's another story.
I've got a little bit of that for you on one of the upcoming events I covered.
Not we had Alley Ketch versus Dango. She defeated, this was a really good match as well. I really enjoyed Alley in this one. Probably one of the top matches I've seen her in. And she defeated Dango in 13:02. And then the main event was Pimpinilla Escarlata versus Effie. And Pimpinilla sadly went over on Effie in 10 on that. It, like I said, it was, if anything, the most all-inclusive event I have ever seen. And it was well done for what I paid for it, and I would probably watch it again.
Nice. Yeah, it's been one of the returning show for the collective. Now I've got, oh god, what are we got three more events to go over, so I'm gonna do this super quick. And I got the Mark Hitchcock Memorial Super Show, formerly known as the WrestleCon Super Show. And match of the night on this event got a $5,000 bonus. Standout matches were Speedball Mike Bailey versus Bandido. This opened the show. It was a highly athletic contest, and Bandido got the win in 6 minutes and 21 seconds. Another standout match from this was Minoru Suzuki versus Biff Busick. You know, even grappling match, Biff's cut from Bloodsport earlier in the night, I believe, opened it up. They fought around the arena. They went between brawling and grappling. It was all about Busick's spirit, but Suzuki got the win in 14:39. And what was probably the most interesting match to me going in was Team PCO versus on PCO's team. We had PCO, Enzo, Jimmy Wang Yang, Barry Horowitz, and Dirty Dango versus Ricky Morton, Robert Gibson, Juice Robinson, Colt Cabana, and Atsushi Onita.
And I didn't know Jimmy Wang Yang was still wrestling.
I think he just came out for this because WrestleCon will really bring together these weird matches, kind of like a Joey Janela's Spring Break will.
Right.
But the team of the Rock and Roll, Bruce Robinson, Colt Cabana, and Onita got the win. Onita's face looked messed up coming into this, so I'd be interested to hear what did that to him. And one of the bigger news events coming off this was the main event was Low-Ki and Homicide versus the Briscoes, and there was an altercation with a fan between a fan and Low-Ki at ringside that really derailed this match, and I think kind of took away any interest that I would have had in it. Eventually, it just became a distraction and kind of ruined the event. I didn't finish the match because I just kind of got sick of it. Now,
that's unfortunate. That's really sad.
Yeah,
that
Super
happened.
Card of Honor was on the Friday night, and this was an event that I was super excited to watch. And because I was recording another podcast, I actually missed the middle of this, and I missed the FTR Briscoes match, so I had to go watch that back at like midnight. But standouts on this show were Lee Moriarty versus Jay Lethal. That kind of accelerated Lethal's heel turn because he's been losing in general, but this kind of really cemented him as a heel. You also had Willow Nightingale versus Mercedes Martinez. You got a video package that accentuated Willow's personality, but Mercedes got the win. Obviously, the notable match coming off this was Briscoe's. If you have not watched this match, it is one of the ones to see. In Suzuki versus Rhett Titus, I was happy Suzuki got the television championship. Josh Woods versus Wheeler Yuta. This was a very good wrestling match. And I think the pure championship rules helped keep it within that kind of focus. Jonathan Gresham versus Bandido was an amazing main event. You know, you could argue it was a clash of styles, but I thought they moved real well. And it was one of the big storylines coming into this. Bandido had been championship. He had been champion before COVID. Due to COVID, travel restrictions happened, and at Final Battle, they needed a championship match where Gresham battled Lethal for the interim championship. Gresham won it, and I was happy to see him get the win over Bandido. Now, I also got Impact Wrestling's Multiverse of Matches, and I was excited for this for a few matches. It was Matt Cardona versus Nick Aldis and Mickie James, and this was a match where it was an intergender match. Men could wrestle women, and Aldis and James got the win, which was good to see.
Nice.
We also had Speedball Mike Bailey versus Alex Shelley. I was surprised by this. I didn't have high expectations going in, but it was a fast-paced match. Shelley kept up with Bailey. Good placement on the card. It was like kind of middle of the card. High energy, right. Kept their kind of energy up. Also, Eddie Edwards versus Tomohiro Ishii was a hard-hitting Japanese-style match. You had Jonah and Josh Alexander versus Moose and PCO. A match that I was very surprised to see. Deonna Purrazzo had an open challenge for either the Reina de Reyes title or the Knockouts title or the ROH women's title. And she defended the AAA Reina de Reyes title against Fabi Apache, who, if I'm not mistaken, she won it from. So this was a good match. Some of the news coming out of it was Taya Valkyrie challenged Purrazzo in a post-match speech, and we'll see Taya Valkyrie versus Purrazzo for the Reina de Reyes title, I believe, at Rebellion.
Oh, and nice.
This was followed by Chris Sabin versus Jay White. I didn't think this match would be exciting at all, and this might have been match of the night. Chris Sabin won in 16 minutes. Jay White got his first pinfall loss in Impact. And, you know, some of this, just at this point, I was just trying to focus on what was in front of me wrestling-wise, because this was like by the time I watched this, this was like 4 or 5 wrestling events in. And the main event for this event was Good Brothers versus the Briscoes. Good Brothers got the win in 9 minutes and 46 seconds. And this was a much better match for the Briscoes than the one versus Loki and Homicide, because you didn't have that distraction built in.
Right.
So, and I mean, that really kind of sums it up for WrestleMania weekend. And that's less than half of what I hope to watch.
Right. There is just so much out there, like you said, to pick and choose from. I did feel like a kid in a candy store with it, though. Like, wow, I can watch any of these number of shows this weekend. And, you know, I get to pick kind of the style and what I'm in, everything from that. So, yeah, it was a lot to take in for those who did not watch that much wrestling.
Yeah, and this is where, like, after this wrestling, too much felt like too much. I wanted to go back and watch regular stuff. Like, I watch Winning Time, the Lakers biopic show on HBO. I wanted to get into Moon Knight on Disney Plus just to watch something that wasn't wrestling, because this felt like overload.
Yeah, I had to do the same thing, and I did. I watched this show Tagged and all these others. just in between, just because my brain can't quite handle that much wrestling.
Yeah, and honestly, that's why it took us so long to bring this show to you. Plus, like, Lee and I live in two different time zones, so, like, time-wise, it's been, you know, kind of hard to meet up for the right time.
Yeah, definitely. And, I'd like to let the Unscripted Violence fans in on, is this your last show with us, Joe?
This is going to be my last regular show with us, and it's been, you know, it's the time difference. It's working on the Working Fans podcast, since I'm more on the production end, that this is going to be my last regular appearance here. And I have talked to my co-host AJ Strangebrew about coming in to be my replacement to record regularly. But, you know, I kind of came on here to kind of help Lee get this podcast going. And I want to say this won't be my last appearance. It'll be my last regular one. Like, Lee and I've turned Lee on to GCW, so I'd like to come on, still review some GCW shows, maybe hit the bigger AEW shows. But I will not be as much of a regular contributor. I'll still be here in spirit. I'm still going to promote the show everywhere I can. Just because I'm not on the show doesn't mean that you won't see me sharing it on the Unscripted Violence group, the Working Fans podcast group. You know, like, when I linked up with Lee, part of the reason was when I started off in podcasting, there wasn't a regular person to be there to give you advice. It seems like as a new podcaster, you ask for advice and everybody's like, we're kind of figuring it out. And when I talked to Lee, I wanted to kind of give him more concrete answers and, you know, help him build more of a structure. And I hope that AJ Strangebrew will be able to take that torch from me and keep running. He's not going to be as much of a spiritual advisor, but he'll be able to give you content.
Yeah, and that's great. And you're always, always welcome here at Unscripted Violence, because you're part of the Unscripted Violence family now. So you've done a lot for us and done a lot for me, and your presence will be your lack of presence here will be noticed.
And, you know, most likely, God, let's just say it, Lee, I'll pop in for AEW pay-per-views, definitely. And aside from that, maybe we'll do some GCW events. You won't be seeing the last of me, but you'll be hearing less of me. But even though I still won't be here, you know, keep listening to Unscripted Violence. Stagger Lee does this because he's a fan of wrestling, and I think, like a lot of fans of wrestling, it's nice for us to have a place to be able to talk about it.
Definitely. And next time I'll be recording will be the next AEW shows, and GCW is not for until at least the 22nd, I think, of April, till there's another GCW. But,
yeah, I was trying to think. Let me check. Yeah, 22nd, 23rd. I was going to say the 26th, but that's a Tuesday. That doesn't make any sense.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so I believe it will be the 22nd and 23rd next weekend. And, guys, this is not goodbye. This is just see you later. And, you know, thank you for listening to us here. Subscribe, like, rate, review wherever you can. If you know somebody that's a fan of wrestling, have them subscribe to the Unscripted Violence podcast, the Facebook page, join the Facebook group. You know, get in there, interact. We all like to talk wrestling, and it just helps when there's more voices kicking around.
Definitely, and I love hearing guys when I do. Which needs to be more often, but we'll we'll get there. Well, thanks for everything. And to everybody out there, I'll talk to you next time I record. Till then, good night. And thanks again, Joe.
Thank you, Lee.